throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kauf with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports, right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Jared is back. So we might rehash a little bit of the college basketball talk that we had yesterday with Oklahoma winning on Tuesday night. Does Jared think they are a lock to make the tournament? How will the Big 12 teams fare? It seems like a lot of the Big 12 games are just ugly rock fights. But does that change when they get away from each other? You get into the NCAA tournament, will the quality shine through, or is it just kind of a bunch of decent teams that are all kind of matched up the same? So we'll ask him that at the end of the show. NBA stuff, Thunder go 2-2 on the West Coast swing as they knock off Portland last night. Scary moment with Bismack Biyombo on the sideline. Did the Western Conference open up just a tick with Karl Anthony Towns torn meniscus? Where does that put Minnesota? League wide, is it just the Celtics title to win? Man, you start looking at what they've done this year. They're one of the better teams analytically that we've ever seen. But we've also seen with this group especially struggles in the playoffs. So is it the Celtics title to lose? And then we're kind of three quarters of the way through the season, about 20 games left for most teams. Who you got in the conference finals, the finals, MVP, and, of course, the one award that a lot of people, MVP obviously, and then rookie of the year, people in Oklahoma will be paying attention to with that two-man race there. And then, of course, we'll recap what happened at the Big House yesterday, Class 2A state tournaments. The Oilerettes of Merritt moving on to the semifinals. The Oilers fought extremely hard last night against Hennessy. Just couldn't get it done, but the Oilers' season ends in the quarterfinal loss. Still a great first year for those guys and Coach Husband. I want Jared to tell us he got to see Dale. Really, both. Did you get to see much of the girl? That was right after, right? The Dale girls right after the Merritt Oilers?
I ran and grabbed lunch. Okay. I met up with a buddy.
Well, everybody wants to know about Riverside anyway. You got to see Riverside before the Oilerettes. So we'll talk about that. How good are the Dale boys? Then you got 4A today, quarterfinals, the last quarterfinal day in the Big House. Western Conference teams all over the bracket that we'll tell you about as well. And one other thing. I started looking at kind of semifinals from last week, then, of course, this week, what's going on. I know we discuss ad nauseum with the coaches, with us, you know, the system that is in place to rank teams and how that determines playoffs. I'm going to tell you something. We will start, you know, we'll criticize it and golly, your buddy system, da-da-da-da-da. In 2A, they got it exactly right. Because 1, 2, 3, and 4 are in the semis on both sides.
That's true.
Boys and looking down through the rest of the classes, they've done a pretty good job throughout the entirety as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple of ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app is free. The Paragon Communications app has everything. Radio, Penny News. So pick up a copy of the Penny News is out right now all over the place. And then, of course, Big Elk and Paragon TV. You can listen to the Oilerettes try to hoist a state title, a gold ball, on Paragon TV. Cool 94 for radio there as well at 1:30 tomorrow. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
Wonderful. I know all of our listeners are glad to have the podcast back because you're here, and I forget every single time to hit record. So that'd be good.
Sometimes I had to put a little note right on my screen here. It says record to remind me.
Here's what's
Maybe
wild.
I need to get one right there for
I you. Even remembered as the first segment was going.
Yeah.
I mentioned it on the air. First segment's going to be not on today's podcast, but the rest of it will. And then by the time I got done flapping my yap for the first segment, I'd forgotten again. to go run around there and hit the record button.
That's ridiculous.
Okay, so you were inside the big house yesterday for both Merritt games. You also saw Riverside before Merritt on the girls' side. Let's talk Oilerettes first. Man, I thought they jumped out to a lead, and it grew at times. It shrunk at times, but it was 14-7 at the end of the first quarter, and they end up winning by 8. They really just kind of held Pecola at arm's length. I think at one point maybe they got it down to, what, 5? Below that, so it really just kind of stayed from.
Yeah, Pecola put they turned it on the fourth quarter.
But they were down like 18 when they started.
Yeah, you could feel the sense of urgency, but they got a good player in Alyssa Parker. Pecola does, and I think even though she finished with 16 points, the big chunk of that came in the first half, and that's where Merritt.
I think she had 10 at halftime, right?
Yeah, they were able to kind of really bottle her up in the third quarter, and that's the quarter that won it. They outscored them 23-11, and so keeping her at bay long enough for Merritt to do what they've done all season long and pull away and hold on to get that win. And the stuff they've done all season long is that's play really good defense and shoot the ball well, especially from outside. They hit 8 3-pointers. 5 of them came from the hands of Chloe Stout, finished with 15 points. She was fantastic shooting. I've seen it before with my own eyes, and I was starting to see it again, thinking, wow, that was not a fluke the first time I saw it. She could absolutely fill it up. And also Addison Hartman finished with a game-high 20 points, 7 rebounds. She was a worker yesterday, and 10 points put in by Marley Mung. Great defense, I think. I mentioned the defense. Ella Porter had that task of kind of clogging up the lane and being real tough, and that's gonna have to. Oh, and one more stat I wanted to mention: they got to the free throw line. Mm-hmm. Merritt did. They hit 12 of 14. Are you listening, kids? They hit 12 of 14 free throws. Pecola hit 4 of 6. It's boring to practice the free throws, but in a game like that, some would say that's probably what helped them pull away and win a state tournament game, was making their getting to the free throw line and making their free throws. 85%, pretty good for Coach Doherty's team right there. So now they get the big task of taking on number 2 Riverside. You mentioned it. I was able to see Riverside. They are well-rounded. They got size. They have athletes that can get inside without using that size or hitting the 3 from outside. I'm just absolutely devastating against Van Oss yesterday, beating them 72-33. And it just kind of, you know, we saw it reminded me of when Hammond played Leedy in that first round game last year, where it just got out of hand and the bench was cleared and they kept it going.
Right.
You know, they kept hitting the shots it's contagious is, you know, the crowd feeds off of it and they kept going on. So, yeah, they beat them 72-33, but let's, in all fairness to Riverside, they did pull off the dogs early enough, like you would expect, but those other players kept hitting their shots, but they are really, really good. So Merritt's going to have their hands full. They're going to have to play tough. That's the one thing that I think is a key, is just be tough and physical as Riverside's going to be to them, and Merritt's not going to back down from that. Seen them enough this year. They are a tough, physical team. And if they can hit the 3 like they did yesterday, I know they took 20 shots from outside, but they hit them when they needed to hit them, and that kind of created that gap and created that momentum for them, especially Stout. So if they can match the shooting that Riverside is going to bring and match the physicality, we're going to have ourselves a knockdown, drag-out fight. It's going to be a fun game. Going to be a fun game. I can't pick a winner. I don't know. They just seem so evenly matched with that kind of like the style that they play with that. I call it physical finesse type style. And it's going to be a fight. It's going to be a fun game tomorrow, 1:30.
Yeah. I mean, Riverside's results don't match what I saw with my own eyes. They probably do for you because they knocked down a bunch of shots. And you know, like I keep harping on that when people ask me. I mean, when I saw them, I wasn't.
Yeah.
They didn't just jump out to me as like, oh my gosh, this is a 2A state champ. Now, but like I said, one game, who knows? It just had a bad shooting night. You know, you knock in three or four open threes, and all of a sudden, that's the game against Elk City is way out of hand instead of just a 12-point win in which the Elkettes won the second half. And so that was the one thing, you know, that you see that ceiling result, and it just that it has to pop your eyes out of your head with knowing what ceiling has been for all these years and then seeing the domination that Riverside put on ceiling. You're like, whoa.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's a different animal. I think it's a totally interesting matchup because I think Merritt is able to handle what Riverside's good at. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think they're equipped to handle that. I would love to know, and you know, we have to ask Coach Doherty this, and maybe some of the girls, but you mentioned Parker and her size and her skill. I wonder how much the last couple of years of Merritt being able to go against and figure out a plan to defend Henley West in the regular season for Hammond helped with being comfortable in doing what they were doing, it sounded like,
right,
just on the air to Parker Pecola.
That's a great point. It makes probably, you know, after having the task of guarding Henley West, what they do, it's like six times last 2 years,
it's been five times, something like that, mm-hmm,
with a lot of success. That makes other not as tall opponents like, well, this is nothing. I've guarded Henley West. I can guard her. But they would, as soon as Parker would touch the ball, they'd almost triple team her. I mean, they'd just collapse down on her and make it incredibly tough for her. It was a good defensive plan on her because, and he said it in the pregame, Coach Doherty did, said, we're not going to let double zero beat us.
Mm-hmm.
It's someone else is going to have to beat us. She's going to have to work. So they made her work, and, man, she worked for 16 points. It just wasn't enough. I mean, another young lady, Letty Parga, had 12. That was only other Pecola player scoring in double digits. You're going to need more production in state tournament games against the top teams in Class 2A to have success. You can't just rely on one or two players. It's going to have to be, you know. And I mentioned the production from Merritt with Stout and Hartman and Mung, and not to take away from the others, they played their roles and played them well, but you need that more well-rounded offensive production, in my opinion, offensive production. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not everyone's going to have a Forsyth on their team that can take over. So,
yeah, and Carnes had 9 chipping in. I mean, they were really balanced.
Almost exactly.
4 in double figures. Yeah. That's really good.
Yep.
Yeah, one anomaly from the Riverside ceiling game, ceiling 0 of 25 from 3.
That is odd.
So,
I mean, something's off. I mean, you're not hitting 1 3-pointer.
That's crazy.
Out of 25 attempts. I mean, you think percentagely you're going to get 2.
Yeah.
I mean, that coin has to drop on heads eventually.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But that makes sense as to when you see that result that doesn't make sense in my mind. Well, there you go. You got a team that, yeah, like just an off shooting night for ceiling would be 6 of 25.
Yeah.
Well, you put 18 in, and all of a sudden that's a lot different game. And that's with not shooting very – that's shooting barely 25% from 3.
Yeah.
You get up there where you're normally probably in that 33-ish. Yeah, now all of a sudden it's a tight one. So,
and that's a trivia question. When's the last time ceiling girls have not –
I forgot about my trivia question.
3-pointer. Okay, yeah.
I forgot about my trivia question.
It seems weird that you're getting this from Jimmy Clark from the
– No. I gave it to Jimmy Clark, and then he fired it out there for some tickets.
I got you.
And by the way, one of our guys, happy birthday, Double D, Diamond Dave. You hear his son Corbin on the air here on the Barbara Dyson Spots.
Oh, yeah.
Double D, I will not divulge that information. I will say one shy of a milestone.
How about that? Oh, okay.
Happy birthday to David Dyson. Oh, here's the trivia question
before
we continue down the 2A state tournament road. So I was reading yesterday. By the way, Jared, you know what happens a month from now?
No. Is it OABs?
Nope.
Is that not?
That's on the Thursday. That's the fourth.
Is it Masters?
A month from now,
yeah,
the Calcmobile will be headed east to begin the journey to Augusta National.
So when are you leaving?
That,
are you,
the, like a the month 11th? From no, the 17th or the 7th. A month from today.
Got to get to. Yeah, this coffee's not working today. It was 1 a.m. when my head hit the pillow. I'm a little tired.
So yesterday I was kind of reading. Well, here's the deal. A tweet popped up and it said, I'm taking my dad to the Masters. First time ever I've been. What are some things you have to do? And so I started reading the comments to get a feel. Asked my buddy that's been there before that we're going with. And then so I started reading about the merch tent. And when I say tent, I think it's a however many squares. Thousands and thousands of square foot building.
A tent that looks like a mall, probably. It's going to be a strip mall, yeah.
So the as I read and you know some different stories about people spending ungodly amounts of money.
Oh yeah.
I came across this figure, and this figure is how many dollars do you think get spent inside the Masters merchandise building per hour?
Per hour.
Per hour.
Okay.
How many dollars?
Okay, so if it was me, and it's my first trip there, like it's going to be yours, and I'm probably thinking I'm buying for multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fistful of dollars here. Who? Let's see. Oh my god! I wonder how many people per hour.
I have no idea.
I will go.
We've got some guesses.
I will go around. I like Broadbent's answer there. I would say about. Let's go lower than that. Let's go about 35,000.
Not even on the planet.
So, really? Like higher?
Oh, yeah. Dakota overshot. Just Dakota overshot. We've had 15 grand, no. 50 grand, no. 300K, no.
Oh, my goodness.
1.5
no.
million is a little too high. Per hour.
So $350 million is a no? It's no, higher?
300K.
Oh, 300, I'm sorry.
300,000. 300,000 is too
million?
Low.
Why did I say million? Good Lord. My mind has just been...
1.5 million too high. We got another guess of 1 million. That's awfully close.
It's going to be 850. 50,000.
Got it. Dead
really?
On the head.
Really?
850. Did you look it up?
No,
did you Google?
No, you can look. I'll lift up the screen.
850K an hour.
Insane.
And so if you multiply that by 10 hours by 7 days, that thing rolls through about $60 million worth of merchandise.
Wow. I'd like to know the number of people on average per hour that is swiping a card. You know what I mean? Yeah. How many people? And so My question is, how much are they spending?
My guess would be, if you average it, probably 100 people. I'm going to say you spend, I mean, 1,000 people. I'm sorry, 1,000 people.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to say you spend about somewhere between $500 and $1,000 on average.
Probably.
Now, there's going to be people that spend way more than that. There's going to be people that just go buy a hat. You know, because not everybody's there for the first time.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to equate that in my mind too,
right.
And I was thinking like in terms of, but it almost kind of offsets, right? There's some people that aren't there for the first time, but they want to get their commemorative pin or something that has the year on it, and then there's people like you, first timer, and you probably have a Christmas list of stuff you're getting for people. So I think it kind of offsets it every year.
The record that they can remember spent is 36,000 by one person.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Do they have shopping carts in there? My goodness.
Well, no, here's the cool thing. They'll just ship it home for you.
You just give them an address and they'll...
Yeah.
I'm sure you spend a certain amount of money. They'll make some... They'll help you out there.
I think you buy it, they ship it home. That way you're not having to carry it around. Yeah, Mark is exactly right. You get you a chair and you go put it somewhere. And nobody touches it. People might sit in it, but if you come back, that's your chair.
There's a respect there.
That's correct.
There's a, yeah.
It's absolutely correct.
Do they put their prices online?
No.
Of their merch?
Good.
Like, well, no, not them, but like, does anybody? Does like there was, say, hey.
I read an article about spending, like how to spend that $36,000.
Oh, yeah?
And it was from like 2022 or 2023, maybe last year. And what they did was you were limited to five items, five of the same item.
Okay.
So you couldn't just buy 500 polos, right?
Gotcha.
To spend that money. And there was price tags beside each thing in that article just to to get to where it got to. Not outrageous. Now, you go online and try to find some of this stuff, it's absolutely outrageous.
It's insane. I've seen it. But that's the cool thing about the Masters, like the food, right? It's been the same price for so long.
Yeah, the sandwiches and all that. You see that somebody will post that, a picture of that menu every single year, and it's insane. You think about going to Southern Hills, like $19 a beer.
Yes.
The Masters, it's $5.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark's right. You can leave your stuff and come back and get it. I think if you drive there and park, they'll let you take it out, put it in your car, and then come back. I think you can re-enter once on your ticket.
Okay. Yeah, that'd
for that
be
purpose.
A thing. Like, do you want to carry that stuff around all
heck
day?
No. No.
Cool. So,
anyway, $8.50 an hour. It's insane.
Well, the reason I ask, I just need to know how much money I need to get. That's why I need to.
It depends on
in my mind.
What are you looking for?
Well, I've been very vocal about a hat, just the classic green.
It's probably
Caddy's
$30 hat. Purchase,
probably,
something like that.
Probably.
They didn't have a couple bills. Here's the problem. You've got to decide before I go in there.
Sure.
Because
you're right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You can't go texting people and be like, hey, what do you want? Hey, what do you want?
Well, I might say, give you
pictures of, you can't do that.
No, I'll give you a certain amount of money. I want the hat. I might say, grab me a polo. I'll let you be the best judgment on this one.
You want a green polo?
I'll let you be the best judgment on style. You have a good sense of style on polos, and I'll give you my size, and I'll say whatever's left over, keep the change as a surcharge or as a tax or whatever. Not for your trouble. For your trouble.
Well, then you'll get the cheapest and
got a month there to figure.
Yeah, I know that's the. They have these gnomes, but they go away on Monday. Like I guess it's kind of this thing,
like lawn gnomes,
13-inch lawn gnomes. But I guess they become like this cult thing to where by the time Monday's over,
they're gone.
They're gone. Like,
are they collectible? Like each one has a year.
I don't know, and I want to know. Mark's been there. I wonder if he can tell us this. Like, you see the flags. So last year, for the first time ever, I didn't know this until watching the par three last year, the coverage. And then they talked about, you always see the kids and, when they exit number nine and they got the flag, the master, that iconic yellow flag, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you start noticing they'll sign the outside. Well, if it's got a year on it, if it's got a year on the flag, then you can sign inside the logo because it's your year to win.
Okay. But if it doesn't have a year.
It's not your year, you can't do it that way.
Wow.
That's amongst the players. That's just a player's thing that they've come up with. So I would love to know if they have different year flags to buy.
Oh, yeah.
Because, for instance, if they did, I would kill to buy a 1992 flag and have Freddie sign it in the logo.
Oh, wow.
Oh, here you go. Yes, they do. Oh, my gosh. I mean, that would be awesome for me.
That'd be cool.
To have his flag, his year flag with his signature. I've got his autograph on a picture of some buddies, but that would be pretty hang up in the house worthy if I could find that,
frame it
to get a
that
picture
behind
of Freddie
glass,
or him signing his flag. But anyway, all right, I got. See, here's the problem with this next month on the show. If you don't like the Masters, too bad.
That's all right.
I'm gonna get sidetracked. We were talking 2A basketball, and I got sidetracked.
We can continue that, but after this weekend, we're gonna be. I mean, we'll talk a lot of Thunder, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think people will be in the golf mode. Golf mood.
Yeah, it's gonna be 75 today. By the way,
Storm.
Another contest ahead, and a new sponsor coming as well. 2A state tournament yesterday where we talked about the Merritt Oilerettes. The Merritt Oilers, man, that was a back and forth, an absolute battle with number 4 Hennessy through about the first few minutes of the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden the lead kind of swelled from 3, and then it was 7, then it was 9, and Merritt was never really able to challenge in a 9-point loss, 59-50 to the Hennessy Eagles. The big dude down low, Torres.
Yeah.
You know, you guys were talking about him and using the descriptions of like tank and, you know, monster. And so then I saw a picture of him, like one of the sites I follow always like takes pictures, sends it out.
Yeah.
You know, at halftime, here's what the score is, here's kind of who the players on each side scoring the points. Well, after it was over, they sent out that picture of him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a huge dude. Not he's tall, but he's wide. Not, you know, just a big old boy. And it was obvious why there could be trouble down low with him with 22 and 11.
Yeah, he has great feet work, and finesse with his touch. So he's kind of that complete package that you want out of a center.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, size, he had size on him. He was hard to contain because of what I just said. He would receive it, knew great court awareness, well-seasoned player. And you saw people in stands hold up signs with number 12, almost at 22. He had 22 points. This is something he's been doing for quite a while. 22 and 11 rebounds for JL Torres. He was the straw that stirred the drink for them. We mentioned the Richardson boys. Camden Richardson finished with 13 points. He's a nice little player for Hennessy. But back to Merritt, though, they graded great effort. It started kind of a slow start for them. Hennessy came out. Then Merritt, once they start hitting those shots, you see a lot. They start hitting their shots, and they just start to calm down. They see it go through the hoop. And actually, Hennessy was having trouble scoring early, too. And I think nerves play a big part of that. And, man, give credit to Merritt, though. And they you could see why, one, they deserve to be in that tournament with the way they play these playoffs or in this state tournament. And, two, the shooting is a big reason why. Joshua Ligon was 17 points, hit 3 3-pointers. Caden Dunlap, such a pretty, like,
I know, dude. He
high
can
arcing
it. Yeah.
Shot from, like, 4 feet off of the three-point line and can get it to go in, finished with 11. 13 points for Caden Smith. Peffer finished with 9 and 6 rebounds, but he had the tough task of matching up with Torres down low. But Peffer had some great – those rebounds, though, he knows his length, right? He's figured out that part of his game where he doesn't need to the common misconception is over the back. Well, he not touching anybody when he kind of reaches over and grabs the ball, and he's figured out – He became a really, really good rebounder. And they gave that great effort. I think the backbreaker for me anyways was that they came out in the third quarter, played really well, except for the final minute. And then Hennessy went on a 5-point run. They hit a buzzer beater because of a turnover. Merritt shot a 3-2 early.
Mm-hmm.
Probably could have waited about 3 more seconds before firing it off. Well, allowed Hennessy to get the rebound. Quickly get it down the court, lay it up at the buzzer, and then boom, crowd erupts. And it was like, oh, you don't want that. And I'm a momentum guy. And I thought that just totally turned the momentum around. Merritt, great effort in that second half or fourth quarter, but it turned into playing catch up mode in the fourth quarter and wind up losing. But man,
yeah, it seems like it went from 32 to 28 Merritt to 35-32 Hennessy going into the fourth quarter like that. And then it got to 38-35 something. You know, Merritt was up 3 or 4, and then all of a sudden –
like 5, I
it
think.
It switched. Yeah. Let's say I just kind of looking at the scores when I saw it and how much it changed, like right – because you see it on Scordle. I was kind of listening and going back and forth with a bunch of things. And, it changed. But we talk about – In the state tournament, in the playoffs, 32 minutes isn't a ton of time. And how often do we see 1.5, 2-minute stretches in somebody's season? You know, in those end of quarter, I harp on it when I'm on the broadcast, the end of quarter situations, that arrow matters, being disciplined in what you're trying to do, whether or not it's like that. Take a last shot and not let the opponent have the ball, no matter where the arrow is, but especially if it's on their side, your opponent's side. You take a shot too soon, they get the ball, they go score, and then bam, they're right back having the ball to start the next quarter, and all of a sudden they scored 5 points without you touching it. You know, and in close games, a lot of that can be the difference in everything. Or if you're milking a lead and you're just not wanting to – you're wanting to limit possessions, you know, into third quarter, being able to be – to be disciplined and composed and run 30 seconds off the clock to take a last shot. You know, a lot of times even make or miss doesn't necessarily matter as much as just not letting the other team have a chance to create another opportunity that then gives them some belief heading into the last quarter. So, you know, it just those are such huge little bitty parts of the game that in the regular season, yeah, it is what it is. In those postseason games, when you get into the big house, those little things become huge parts of the game, right. And we see it
Those little things. I mentioned it in the Merritt girls game. The difference, part of the difference, was the free throws. Same thing in this game. Hennessy went to the free throw line, or shot 12 free throws, made 10 of them, mm-hmm. compared to Merritt's 8 of 15. And what's kind of frustrating, I guess, if you're a Merritt fan, is they shot better from the field than Hennessy. They shot the three better from the field, percentagely, than Hennessy. But it was the free throws of Hennessy. They made 10 of 12. It was a 9-point game. You do the math.
Yeah.
But part of that, at the end of the game, they start fouling and put them on the free throw line.
But it even accentuates it more because they outscored Merritt by 2 with taking 3 less free throws, and probably in the run of the game, they had tied them, taking 5 or 6 or 7 less free throws before the fouling had to start. So, yeah, that's there's no doubt that matters too.
Yeah.
All right, tell me about Dale.
Oh, man.
Tell me about Dale.
So everyone showed up.
Here's my question.
Here's a question I have.
Yeah. Before you start, everybody knows about Forsythe.
Sure. That's why everyone's there.
People don't realize how good the rest of that team is. So my question is this. Could they win the state tournament if Dayton Forsythe wasn't even on the team?
Yes.
I thought so too.
Yes. On the way home, I've been driving a lot, so I find podcasts. I listen to a lot of our mothership station podcasts. I was listening to Mark's interview with Coach Edmondson, head coach of Dale, and so this was after the fact, after the game. He was talking to him yesterday afternoon before their game. So he was kind of saying what I thought I saw and saying about these guys, you could tell I've said this before, I said it last week during the small school basketball tournament, was you could tell the teams have been playing with each other since they were in diapers. These boys are it. They're neighbors. They grew up together, play AAU together. He's coached them from then till now. So, and they all know their roles on the team. They're all very well distributors of the basketball, great shooters. Absolutely they could win state without Forsythe. It's nice to have them, but it's weird to say they didn't need them. They're just a really well-constructed team. That program is a machine. He said they have about 100 kids total in their basketball program right now. Boys, mm-hmm. from junior high to high school. 100 in two-way. Can you imagine that? Do they even have a gym big enough to have practice?
That's nuts.
That is insane. But he's the real deal. I had my buddies text me because they knew I was there. Like, is he for real? And he has such a quick first step, such explosiveness. But it's not just about him getting to the rim. He can shoot it. He only took 4 threes. He didn't need – I mean, they won 87-50, so they set him down pretty early. But he finished with 23 points. But his stroke was so nice, getting to the free throw line, everything about his game. But the way he sets up to receive the basketball, no matter where he's at in the court, it's – you can tell this kid has lived in the gym. I mean, just so fluid, so calm, plays with such grace. Like I said, quick first step, explosive. He's real fun to watch, and I can't wait to see how this all translates to the next level in Norman for Coach Mosier, who was there, by the way. That was kind of cool. I was too chicken, you know what, to go down and say hi. Even though I had my press pass, I probably could have, but I didn't want to interrupt him. But, no, it's a... And I credit him, too. He stayed the entire game. You'd think once Forsythe sat down, you knew mm-hmm. his day was done. He stayed the entire game. But they are the real deal. This is one of the best teams I've seen with my own eyes in person. And I mean that.
Yeah. No, that's – just because it's a two-way school doesn't mean that it's not one of the better ones we've ever seen in boys basketball in the state of Oklahoma.
They went out and they found competition this year.
Mm-hmm. They did it last year. Won the tournament champions last year.
Exactly. They played.
I think.
And I heard in this interview, They played Hoover, Alabama. Did they beat them or lose to them? I can't remember. Over in that tournament.
I think that's the team that might have beat them.
Well, Hoover, Alabama just finished up wrapping up the Alabama state title.
State title.
Yeah. So you can see kind of the quality of teams they've been playing. And Edmondson mentioned during Mark's interview was, yeah, we wanted to play Edmond, North, or one of the Edmond schools that's really good right now. So we just didn't have the opportunity. But you know, they're looking for that, and they understand we're one of the better teams, not just in the state, but in the country. You don't get better by just playing teams in your region. Let's go find that competition. They went and found it this year. It's made them better, but as a team, they're really good. And he has a brother, too, who he says, Edmondson said, that he will get some looks when he gets over. He doesn't even start on this team.
Well, that's what Jared just texted us, that Mark said they might be there watching the brother, too. He being
Isn't Mosier. That how it works, though, sometimes? It's the younger of the sibling that turns out
having
to be.
Having him on that team gets everybody seen. There's no telling how many of those guys might end up getting to play college basketball on whatever level because there's people there watching Forsyth.
There is a kid, and forgive me for not remembering his name.
Is it the redheaded kid?
How good is that kid? Just, he doesn't look like he should be that good. Short, kind of skinny, but just plays with such poise, and I was impressed with him. He stood out to me. Yeah, Forsyth is a real deal. And I was mentioning the crowd. I kind of mentioned it. It was like, first off, they took Warner's crowd completely out of the game early. It's like they knew this was coming. Two, I didn't think the crowd was as big. Now, it was Wednesday night, 7:30, middle of the week. But part of me was like, no, they're just waiting for Saturday.
Well, and it's still
inevitable.
The thing about it is it's still on these early week games, it's just the two-way. You know, we kind of compare it to last Saturday. Well, last Saturday was everybody.
Yeah.
You know, A and B, and we're all there. I have a feeling Saturday night, that place is going to be jam-packed.
Yeah, well, Friday even, too, because you're going to be joined in there with 4A, I believe.
Let's say, I know that Saturday night.
2A is the first session.
2A boys are the last two games tomorrow.
Okay.
I looked that up. 7:30 and 9 on the boys' side. And then, of course, you've got
7:30 and 9.
7:30 and 9.
So 4A boys semifinals are 4:30 and 6.
So there you go.
So you're going to get
your
Douglas fans in there, more than likely. You're going to get your Weatherford fans in there, more than likely, and a Darko fans, and they're going to hang out and watch that.
Okay, let's 100%. Go to 4A right quick.
Yeah.
It starts today. 4A girls, 4A boys. And on the boys' side, three Western Conference teams, Western Conference being, you know, what Elk City and Clinton, Weatherford, they all play in the same conference there. Weatherford plays Stillwell at 4:30, Darko and McLean at 6, Blanchard and Douglas at 7:30. I mention this because there's a chance we get Weatherford and Darko tomorrow.
I know where you're going.
Is there a chance in the state semifinals? That Shumpert's.
Oh, there's always a chance. If he's the head coach, there's a chance. Yeah. Yeah, I hope there is. And I hope Mark's not on the call on that one.
He will be.
Poor Mark.
Yeah, it'll be the night game.
Yeah.
He'll be there. So, I mean, that's...
Oh, boy.
I mean, that made national news.
Oh, yeah.
With that 4-2 score. Let's just look at the other results outside of that 4-2 between these two teams over the last couple of years. This year, they played before Christmas. Weatherford beat Anadarko 66-46. Okay? I believe they played again last year after the 4-2. I think it was in the playoffs. Nope, it was right. There's 4-2. Man, I thought they might have played in. I thought they played in the playoffs. They didn't. They did not. God, I thought they did. Anyway, so 4-2 versus 66-46. One of those is clearly not like the other. Is there a chance?
Whatever it takes to win. And watch them win the opening tip, go and lay it up, make a stop.
And then just stop playing.
And then just stop playing.
For the whole quarter. Then if you make a shot at the end of the quarter, you're up 4-0, maybe 5-0, let's say. Weatherford gets the ball first, and then you run the entire quarter.
It's going to feel like third grade Clinton League. If you're up by four to nothing, you think you got this thing won.
For the viewing pleasure of the folks in the big house tomorrow, Everybody's going to be rooting for Tulsa McLean.
Yes.
Oh, man. And can you hear, think about the crying and the whining for a shot clock by every, you know what I'm saying? Immediately.
Oh, yeah.
That, as much as we thought there was an uproar last year in the regular season game when that happened, think about if it happens in the state semifinals. Oh, my gosh.
Merritt about benefited from a shot clock yesterday. Did you see that in the boys' game?
Mm-mm.
I forget what end of what quarter, close to end of a quarter. Merritt had a breakaway. I forget. I'm looking it up right now. And the kid just kind of threw up the wild shot to try to get it to go in the bucket. It went straight up, hit the shot clock, and went through the hoop. Well, obviously it didn't count. Everyone, it was screaming and laughing, and it was a wild shot.
The text line's funny about the Weatherford and Anadarko possibilities.
Yeah.
May burn that thing down. Speaking of, did you see what happened in New Jersey?
What a robbery, man.
Massaquan. How do you say that? Massaquan?
Did the Sopranos have money on that game?
Manassaquan.
In Jersey there?
Camden, New Jersey. If you're Camden's coach, do you even consider going, you know what, we didn't win that game, we're not going. Man, we're just almost conference championship tournament week for the bigger schools next week. And, of course, Selection Sunday, a week from Sunday. And you know what that means, Jared?
The real season begins.
That means the Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge is back. I have it set up on the ESPN site.
Look at you go.
I have a link on our Skinny on Sports Facebook already. Obviously you can't pick anything yet because the bracket hasn't been drawn up, but you can absolutely get your entry ready to go, as I have. Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, and all the gang at Western Oklahoma Realty. People before property is their motto. They sponsor the Bracket Challenge, sponsor the college pick'em during the football season. We've got some, we got some exciting news coming on Monday, Jared.
We got to wait till Monday?
We got to wait till Monday.
It's Thursday.
We got to wait till Monday, but we got some exciting news for the show. A new sponsor coming aboard.
Oh, I love that.
At the perfect time for the NCAA tournament and the summer sports schedule. We'll tell you about that all on Monday. But, we're ready to rock and roll. I've got it set up, ready to go. So you can get your entry in to the group. Skinny on Sports. Here's how it goes. It says Skinny on Sports - Western Oklahoma Realty is the group you're looking for on the ESPN site. Or just click the link that I put in that Facebook post on the Skinny on Sports. I shared it with mine. I shared it with Paragon TV. So there's lots of different ways you can find that. Listen, Jared, I'm not trying to get skinny. I am trying to make sure I don't die walking up the hill at 9 or 18 at Augusta National. I've been walking last two nights. So,
I see. Last
two nights we're looking at trying to get 12 miles in per week.
12 miles a
12
week.
Miles a week, which we
well,
got
ambitious and for me, but
3.2 nights ago we went 2.4 last night. But I think probably I'm feeling pretty good. I feel way better than I did yesterday.
Well, good.
So maybe we can up that just because the walking around the Augusta National is going to be tough. So,
are you walking up and down hills?
Just around the neighborhood. There's plenty of hills.
Okay.
Here and there.
Have you considered walking around of golf?
No, but if I would just quit being so lazy in the mornings, what I used to do was get up and go walk the golf course.
Yeah.
There's nobody out there at 6 in the morning.
What
walk the cart path.
What better scenic place to walk?
Yeah, I've taken a bunch of cool pictures, too, with the sun coming up.
Oh, yeah. The dew on the greens. Yeah. Yes.
But
it's a good idea.
Yeah. I'd much rather be in my golf cart playing golf than walking around the golf course. But, hey, it is what it is. Got to get ready.
Do you
to
have
roll.
A cart you can pull, or do you have a or push? I guess with your clubs. Do you have a?
I have a golf
thing?
Cart I can ride in.
No, I mean the walk.
I no. If
I
mean, I'm going to
take
golf,
your walk in the morning, just
if I'm
going to
play
your clubs.
I don't want to do that. If I'm going to play golf, I'm going to be walking, or I'm not going to be walking. I'm going to be riding. All right, Jared. Bracketology. Going into this week, had Oklahoma a 9 seed on Lenardi's. I looked at Jerry Palm on CBS Sports. He had him a 9. I'm sorry. Lenardi had him 10. Jerry Palm had him 9. Coincidentally, both of those guys, even though they had them different seeds, had them playing Dayton. You know?
Mm-hmm.
10-7 and 9-8 anyway. And then SI.com had him a 10 playing Boise State as a 7. I think maybe the SI.com, they were one of the last four buys, but that was before the win, as ugly as it might have been on Tuesday night over Cincinnati. Now Oklahoma 20-10, first time they've won 20 games since the Buddy Hield Final Four season. They're guaranteed at worst an 8-10 record in the Big 12 Conference. Do you think that win on Tuesday night absolutely solidifies Oklahoma in the NCAA tournament?
Well, everything I've heard, it sounds like it did. It sounds like that's the one that they almost had to win, because winning at Austin seems like it's going to be tough. But it sounds like that no matter what they're in, if they go and lose in Austin and even lose their first-round Big 12 tournament game. That's what I'm just relaying what I've heard.
Right.
I've been driving a lot, so listen a lot of sports talk radio. But I think it does. Honestly, I thought – because I think that was the talk going into that game, and so when that went zeros in overtime, I thought that's it. They should be in.
Yeah,
from everything I'm hearing, that it's enough to get them in. Now it's just a question of what seed, and they could probably improve their seeding if they can get hot here in the Big 12 tournament. They got to get healthier though. They got to get Hughley back, which I've heard he's dressed out, just not playing, and McCollum didn't even play.
No, he had a shoulder. Suarez is battling through. You can tell it.
Yes.
Yeah, he's got spurts of really good, but then he's got spurts of kind of
right.
A little bit rough, you know, with that ankle not being all the way healthy.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm in a total agreement. I think they're there. I think that now it's just – I don't know how many games and who they – the thing is not only – I mean, obviously a win in Austin would put you even 9-9. So if you look at those projections, you go 2-0 this week, even though it's against the unranked teams. You end up a 500 team, 21 wins in the regular season in the Big 12. Does that get you to say move you up one line in each of those projections? So let's just say, you know, best case scenario for Oklahoma going into the Big 12 tournament, Jerry Palm is right, and so these two wins move them from a 9 to an 8. Well, how many then in KC do you need to win one, go 1-1 and lose to one of the better? I think you'd have to play Houston in the second round with being like that 8-9 game against – it looks like they may play Texas twice in a row with the way the standings are. So if you could even beat Texas twice, then lose to Houston, would that be enough to maybe push you to a 7? Because you don't want to be 8 or 9 because of not only that matchup, but then the second round matchup. I for me, honestly, I'd rather be a 10 than an 8 just because of what you know.
Yeah.
The first round game is going to be really similar to an 8 and 9.
Sure.
7 and 10, that's going to be really similar, but then the second round game
is a more winnable
you know, in a lot of years. This year may not be quite as big a gap because there's not maybe that, you know, it seems like you probably, I don't know if you want to say you don't want to play Purdue, but you don't want to play Purdue. You know, their history in the tournament isn't good, but that team has been awesome this year. Obviously, Houston, the Sooners were right with them. I think that was an anomaly, playing that good of offense, knocking in threes. And then UConn, you probably want to avoid any of those. So you can do that, being on that 7-10. And then, you know, you get two seeds will be Carolina, maybe. You played them pretty well in the first. I mean, that's not an unwinnable game. With what we saw when the two teams played, you know, Marquette is a possibility. Maybe a Duke, maybe an Arizona. I mean, Alabama, Tennessee. You know, one of those types of teams would be kind of what's there. I think you'd much rather that than Houston, obviously.
Yeah.
And I don't think Houston would be the team. So probably either Purdue or UConn. I think you got a way better chance of beating one of those others as a 10 than you would, you know, as 8 or 9.
Well, this year, you never know. It just seems like there's so much parity because of the landscape of college basketball. You know, the outside of maybe a couple teams like you mentioned, like a Purdue. You mentioned the history that they have in the tournament, but they still have Edie back, and I think they'll be a little bit more focused. And then, of course, UConn. But it is a year it feels like that seeding be damned. I mean, I think you can make a case for almost anybody to beat anybody.
I think it is purely matchups.
Yes. Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, I think there's a lot of teams around the country, even up higher in the pecking order, that would trade – say a 4 seed for a 6 seed, depending on what that road is, you know, and who is in the way, who the matchups are, because it seems like now there are some. I don't even think I'm not going to say elite. I don't think there's an elite team out there. I just don't. I don't think even that UConn team of last year. I don't think there's anybody that good. So you've got some really really good teams, and then you've got a big old giant bucket of the rest. You know, I mean, this is one of the craziest years where, and maybe it was that way last year with what we ended up seeing, but it feels like there's not a hill of beans difference, at least in the Big 12, between teams that are going to be 3 seeds and teams that are going to be 9 and 10 seeds. It doesn't feel like there's that, you know, a lot of times you go, oh, gosh, don't want to play Kansas. Oh, yeah? Who the hell's scared about playing Kansas?
OSU.
You know, I mean, it's just the truth. There's not a – but see, Kansas, that matchup, it's all about the matchups with the teams. Like, if I'm Oklahoma, the two teams that I don't want to see in a bracket would be Houston and would be Baylor. Probably Iowa State because of how ugly that game is, although it's not in Hilton. But, I just don't see – Houston and Baylor, to me, are losses and move on. Whereas somebody else, you might have a better chance up, you know, a little bit higher in the pecking order. Mm. How do you think the Big 12 is going to do? I think nationally, everyone thinks it's the best conference. Everyone thinks it's the toughest conference. Is that going to show in the big dance with the teams getting away from each other? And then you see like Oklahoma is a perfect example of this to me. You look in the non-conference. Yeah, they didn't beat a world beater, but they beat some good teams, some decent teams, some good name teams. Outside the conference, then you look up and you're almost losing to Cincinnati, one of the bottom feeders in the Big 12. So getting away from each other, do you think that really shows the strength of the Big 12? Or are these close games from, say, the third best team in the league clear to the bottom a result of maybe the strength isn't really there at the top of the league like we've seen it in the past?
I think to answer the question how I think they'll do, it really is – I hate to go here, but it's really contingent on the officiating crew.
I said that yesterday.
On how it's going to be called. Because you have these Big 12 officials now, they understand this is going to be a fight. There's going to be a lot of bruises handed out. We have to call it as such to, you know, we have to kind of adjust. So that's you know, you're not going to get a Big 12 crew, but I think you get I don't know, an ACC crew, and you know, say it's a Big 12 team versus a team from the WAC, and some would say, well, that probably favors the Big 12 team. But if they keep calling fouls and fouls and fouls, all of a sudden the Big 12 team that likes to get physical suddenly have to change up and adjust, and all of a sudden that team from the WAC, say St. Mary's or Gonzaga, is filling it up. And so it again, that's where I go, is how are the officials going to call? So you kind of get a feeling for that about the first 5 minutes of the game, like, okay, they're going to start blowing the whistle for this or that or whatever, or they're going to let them play. And that's how – and yeah, we call it the best conference – in the country because of quality from top to bottom. But that's a great question of how is it fair? How does it match up with those other teams, and how are they allowed to match up with those other teams?
Yeah. I think when you look at the SEC, it's way more fun to watch an SEC game than it is the Big 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in a tournament setting, you get, you know, Kentucky and Kansas. If Kansas can rough them up a little bit, does that take some of the skill away? It almost, it's not all the way the same to this, but it almost reminds me of when we talk about Class A boys. The football teams
Yep.
Versus the basketball teams, yep. right? And yep. and if it's allowed to football team strength to matter, then all of a sudden it's a totally different game. If it's more of a game of skill and basketball acumen, a lot of times those basketball teams right. win the game.
Seen it a lot.
Yeah.
Seen it a
and
lot.
And so that's yep. kind of how I would equate it, at least locally, Big 12 versus SEC.
It's a good example. Yeah.
If they start to match up with each other in the tournament. But, I think it's going to be very, very interesting.
Yes.
To see how the Big 12 does. Update from the Big House.
How many you think get in? Nine?
Yeah, I think nine. Texas was sort of on the bubble. The last week or so, they got a couple of pretty big wins out in Lubbock, I think was a huge win for them.
Oh, yeah.
They fell to Baylor. That's a game they led a bunch of that time.
Does that matter? I mean, does the committee go, man, they played them really well? Like, oh, you played Houston really well.
I think maybe if you start splitting hairs between two teams, maybe it does, but I doubt it. I think it's all about winning games or losing games. Dylan Dessou out probably with the leg injury, the big guy for Texas. Could that help OU? Because I know he was a huge part of Texas winning in Norman that last time.
They couldn't
do anything with that guy. And so we'll see what his status is for Saturday and, of course, for the Horns moving forward. In their season as well. Update from the Big House.
Yeah.
To nobody's surprise, Bethany is hammering Tuttle. It's 40-20 going into the fourth quarter.
That's a not bad Tuttle.
Yeah, it's not
fourth
terrible.
Fourth quarter, 20 points, not bad.
Not terrible. Not terrible by you. There was actually four girls that have scored 1,000 points on the floor in that game. Three from Bethany, one from Tuttle.
Wow. Now, remind me the question we had about Dale and Bethany, who would win by the largest margin.
Yes.
Like in the entire tournament. Saturday.
In the entire tournament.
Well, right now Dell is.
Dell is 17 up.
Yeah.
I'm gonna need Coach Eric Saylor to pour it on Tuttle like he poured it on the Elkettes. Okay, come on, bro.
And I don't think
didn't have a problem putting 100 on us. Where is it at right now?
And sorry, Hennessy, but you're nice run.
Listen,
but Dell's coming.
As that game was playing out last night, I was texting with one of my buddies, and I was like, you know, I wonder if those kids on the floor are thinking, hey, this is cool. Now we get to be beat by 40 tomorrow. You know, it's just the reality. Or do they think they can win?
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!